When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney, here to talk Cubs. Thank God. Thank God this is not a Chicago Bears podcast. And so we will not harm those of you who are Bears fans by talking about it, or bore those of you who are not by talking about it. But as it relates to the Cubs, I would only say that I was thinking yesterday, as that Bears-Packers game was winding down, about what an absolute disaster it was, not only as a game, but sort of concerns that it prompts about where this process is of building the Bears back up. I couldn't help but think about just how different the story is for the Cubs right now, not only because this was a Cubs team, it's easy to forget, that came into this season as a, 25% shot at a postseason thing. That wasn't an expectation. It wasn't like, oh yeah, the Cubs are always going to be in the race till September. This was a pleasant surprise almost. And here the Cubs are able to lose 3 of 4 to the team chasing them in the playoff race and still hold on to the same spot they were in. So, and that's to say nothing of what the future arguably looks like for the Cubs, either in comparison to the Bears or really any other baseball team. It's just a bright, happier situation, both in the current year and looking ahead to the future. And that struck me during that game, and it struck me again this morning because there's some big news originally reported by Jeff Passan and then confirmed by you guys, among others, that top Cubs prospect Pete Crow Armstrong is going to be coming up this week to join the Cubs in Colorado. Woohoo! It's very fresh. We're recording this but 45 minutes after the news broke, so I'm still kind of mentally unpacking some of the implications. And I don't want to get too overly excited because I don't want people to think that it's a situation where he's coming up to transform anything. But he is the most notable prospect to come up to the Chicago Cubs in quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, have they had a top 15, top 10 prospect recently outside? I mean, I guess Brennan Davis, but we know how that went almost immediately after he reached that top prospect status. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how he's used, what exact role he has. I mean, it's very obvious he can help defensively. As a pinch runner, we know this team, they had some, when they have offensive struggles, when the offense goes in a lull, they like to try and take that base and try and make things happen offensively. So it could be a smaller role. We don't know. It could be just starting right away. Mike Tauchman's struggling right now. Jamer Candelario left yesterday's game with, I think it was described as back tightness. So we'll see. There's ways to get him into the lineup regularly. I know people are going to immediately compare this to the Canario situation. Very different prospects, very different types of players. I'm not sure if it's comparable, but we'll see how often he's used. We're continuing. I mean, Patrick wrote a little bit about this. We've all written about this, but the present is going very well for the Cubs, and the future is really bright. I think this is just kind of the we're starting to see this, right? Like Jordan Wicks comes up, PCA comes up, Javier Assad's already impacting the club. This is just kind of the beginning of what should be a consistent trickle of talent impacting the team. I'm curious to see how well he does. I'm curious to see how he's used, but I don't want to get too high on this. I don't want fans to overrate him almost and act like he's an impact bat, but he certainly can impact the team over the final month, and we'll see if he does enough to earn a playoff spot if they playoff roster spot if the Cubs get in the postseason.
I mean, PCA was the guy that Cubs officials would kind of reference when they were talking about, you know, Chris Morel or Matt Mervis in terms of like being able to carry a young player on the roster and let him develop at the major league level if you know what you're going to get in some area. Can he impact the game when he goes 0-for-4? And PCA is definitely that guy. And, you know, the comp, you know, I had heard with him was kind of like Javi when he first came up, that, you know, he'll have some crazy swings. He'll look bad moments at the plate. But you can put him where the ball is going to be hit. He's going to make awesome plays. And PCA in center field is that guy. I think back to Javi's major league debut, which was at Coors Field, second half of the 2014 season. And, like, the Cubs needed that guy to be a superstar. And, like, he was for stretches. And with PCA, I think they just need him to be a nice role player on a playoff contender. And I think that's just a huge difference. Brett, I had the same thought while watching the Bears game of just, you know, a organization. I mean, that was like, you know, peak like Cubs Cardinals at the worst times. You know what I mean? Like just a Packers organization that just like, you know, plugs in another guy, another homegrown guy, and they, you know, make the big plays, they execute the fundamentals, while the other team just gives away the game. And obviously the Cubs did not meet the standards that they once talked about being like, you know, the New England Patriots or like Manchester United. They weren't a dynasty. They're not kind of what the Dodgers have become, but I don't know, you look around this city at, you know, how bumbling and insular the White and backwards the White Sox are. You look at the Bears, you even look at you know, what the Blackhawks are coming out of, and you know, all of a sudden, like, Cubs are the Bulls.
Don't forget the Bulls.
I mean, you can
God,
you can, yeah, it's just like there's a level of optimism and competency that you don't find everywhere else. And I think PCA is a good example of like where things are trending.
I like to think about the Javi PCA stuff too, for so many reasons. Like you mentioned, it is just a fun bit of synchronicity that PCA will be coming up at Coors Field just as Javi did. And that's the guy who was literally traded for Javi. And their energy on the field, their demeanor, their attitude, their spark, their folks who haven't seen PCA play much will see why that's an immediate comparison that people come to, because he just does that kind of stuff. Running the bases, you know, yesterday he hit a grand slam, okay? But that was not the highlight that stood out to me. If you looked at the clips of his game yesterday, it was he hit a routine single up the middle, ground ball single up the middle, that turned into a double because he just didn't stop running. He just went, he forced the throw to second, and you watch that play and you're like, that is a Javi play. That is something that Javi Baez at his peak of athleticism would have done. And of course he reaches the base and he's screaming and he's like pumped, and it just reminds you so much of the things that Javi did. But what I think is really interesting about that, the parallels there, is where they stop. And this is something you alluded to, Mooney, which is when Javi came up, that was 2014. It was the second half where the Cubs were starting to bring up those guys. And it was sort of like you could start to see the formation of what could be in the future a competitive team. And obviously it came very quickly in 2015. We look back at that second half of 2014 is when things kind of turned over a bit. PCA, it's not just that he is not going to be relied on to be a superstar in the way that Javi was when he came up. It's also that he's joining a team that is right now trying to win. I dig that. We've been talking, it feels like, for weeks and weeks and weeks about the possibility that PCA would come up in a complementary role, and this is what competitive teams do down the stretch as they think about how they could bring up a younger player to incorporate some speed, some defense, these things that help round out a roster. But it's going to be a very different introduction to the big leagues for him than it was for almost any. It's almost more like when Ian Happ came up, although that was earlier in the year, where though a lot of the previous core, they came up at a time when the Cubs not only weren't good, but they weren't expected to be good. And it was like, nope, just get introduced to the big leagues, play well, figure out what it's like to be a big leaguer, face big league pitching, and we'll worry about winning next year. That isn't what
Schwarber.
PCA is going to
get. Maybe Schwarber,
right?
Maybe Schwarber is the right...
Is like what PCA...
Schwarber or Wilson are the two comparisons, right?
Well, Wilson certainly. Was he August...
It was sometime in 16. I think it was June or July, but...
June or July, yeah. Yeah, so certainly I still wouldn't quite put the parallel there because they had already started winning in 15. It wasn't quite... But in any case, the point still stands, which is that, you know, I almost could make the argument that it's an easier place to be when trying to make your first big league adjustment, because there isn't going to be this expectation that, okay, you know, things are slipping away from us, or this is the entire weight of the city and its sports legions are weighing on you. So I think that's also why I've struggled a little bit here at the outset of this podcast, because it's balancing those two things that, like, I'm very excited to see this player come up. Been following him for since the Cubs acquired him years ago. And it's like, okay, really excited to see this young guy. But that isn't a product of me feeling like he is the difference between the Cubs making the playoffs and not. And I don't want anyone else to take that away. And I wouldn't want him to take that away. That it's like, okay, they're calling you up because they need you now. It's really more of like they're calling you up now because I think you're ready to help contribute a little bit.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, this is, with them being in a playoff race, this isn't as impactful or as big of a reason right now, but you do want to get him some experience in the big leagues nowadays with the new rules. You know, if he starts the season next year with the team, and then, what, if he wins Rookie of the Year, they get some extra draft pick. Is that, am I remembering the rules right? Right? So there's
it's that, or if he finishes top three in MVP voting right before he hits arbitration.
Okay. So there's some benefits here, potential benefits. And he's certainly someone that has a chance to enter the season as, you know, on everyone's radar as a potential Rookie of the Year. So it's not like this is like some huge long shot type situation. He should be on people's radars. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, for the most part, this is just another sign of good things happening. And I think most importantly, let's see how he's used, I guess. That's where I keep coming back to. Sorry, my brain is going back to the Bears, and I'm thinking about how angry I was in the press box. it was one of those games where I'm like, I'm glad I'm working, because if I watched all of this, I'd be in such a bad mood. should we get to the Diamondback series? I feel like we covered PCA well.
Yeah, let's we can circle back. Yeah, we can circle back to that with the Cubs salvaging Sunday's win and then the three that came before.
Right. I don't know if I said this when did we record last? Thursday? So they hadn't played the Diamondbacks.
Before Thursday. Yeah, before Thursday.
So they were they were on a high of sweeping the Giants. Maybe I'm being too rosy here. I didn't think the offense was like some disaster these past few days before Sunday. I really thought there were some signs of just like, okay, they didn't get that big hit type situation. They didn't, like, sometimes the balls were hit right at people. one guy who I've been watching since last Sunday, since the Sunday in Cincinnati when he had, I think, four hits, maybe not four hits, maybe three hits. Dansby Swanson had a few hits in Cincinnati. I feel like his at-bats have completely changed. I think that's one of the bigger pieces here that some of, especially even during the Arizona series, he looked good to me. And then it paid off on Sunday. I think those are the little things that I'm watching that, okay, they need more than Bellinger, right? And Seiya's hot right now, but who else? Who else? Is Ian Happ cooling down again? Is he hot still? You know, you need other guys to step up over this stretch. PCA isn't this instant offense guy that they've called up and is going to change the lineup, right? He could certainly help and give some of that juice in the sense that, okay, if he gets on base, it's going to be exciting, right? If he's on base, that's the type of situation where he could kind of motivate the rest of the group with how exciting he is. But I'm looking for other people to step up that are part of this core, and Swanson is one of those guys. Candelario's back issue, I think, I'm curious how long that's been going on, because his numbers have been really rough for a while now. It's not just a week or so. It's basically since a week after he was acquired. He's not been hitting that much. He has random spurts here and there, but just no consistency anymore. And I'm curious how long that back has been bothering him. But I keep being struck by the resiliency of this group. I keep being struck by the fact that it's so easy to want to check out and say, like, oh, here's that, here it is, here's the collapse, or here, they're struggling now, they're going to lose way too many games. They keep proving to us over and over again that these bad moments are just that, moments, and they can overcome them really quickly. And I think that's to me is the hallmark of this group. Like, they have had so many moments where we've counted them out, or we've wondered, is this where the run stops? Is this where they collapse? And they have collapsed at times, right? They've had that. But over the past 2 months, I think they've avoided that to the point where I think Patrick wrote it, and we've been saying it. Like, it's just time to, like, kind of accept, like, this team is good, and while they may have little hiccups here and there, I don't think, like, an extended stretch. I don't want to get yelled at, but I don't think an extended stretch of really poor play is coming that'll sink this group.
Yeah, I mean, watching those games over the weekend, you know, those losses, particularly Friday and Saturday, it's not like they played sloppy. I think, you know, a bounce here, a break there, and I think you're looking at, you know, at worst, a series split, if not winning three of four. I mean, that's how close it was. It did feel playoff-ish. Just looking at some of the pitchers on the mound, the sound inside Wrigley Field, and, you know, that Diamondbacks team too, like, they've got a lot of young talent, and I think that was something that, kind of heading into this year, if you're looking at the Cubs, like, as an eye test, like, I think baseball's so regional that you think, like, oh, my team has great prospects and all of them are going to be great, and you kind of forget about the rest of the landscape, particularly a team like the Diamondbacks that kind of operates more in the background nationally. And, you know, I thought David Ross once again kind of handles this pretty well. I think his demeanor, whether it's walking through the clubhouse or in the interview room, I think is something that this team has really benefited from. And yeah, I mean, they needed that one yesterday. I mean, we all know how Coors Field plays. Like, weird stuff is going to happen over the next three games. Chase Field isn't the easiest place to play either. The Diamondbacks aren't going away, but oh, this team's kind of been built on, like, treading water, right? And if they could, you know, win a series or split the road trip, they're going to be in really good shape.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think it's easy for people to forget that this series loss against the Diamondbacks was the first series loss for the Cubs in over a month. And that is a product of not only that they've played well, but it's like you guys have been saying, they just don't really fall into these deep pits where you know, two losses turns into three, turns into four. And I think this weekend was a really good example of both of those points, because obviously they salvaged the game on Sunday, kind of had it pretty well in hand, even after three losses. There's no hanging their heads after the three losses and thinking, oh shit, we're going to get swept by this team that's about to tie us in the standings. But it's also the fact that, you know, I would even go back to Thursday's game, which the Cubs did lose by, what, three or four runs, but that was not a non-competitive game. That was one where the Cubs were smoking the ball all game, and I didn't crunch the numbers, but it might be one of the uppermost games this year where the Cubs had really good batted balls that turned into outs, and that's just how it happened. And then there was issues with the wind. They had several home runs that weren't, because Wrigley giveth and taketh away. But both Friday and Saturday were coin flip games, and the Cubs lost those because the hits didn't fall in. But that's what it took, this combination of things, and facing, of course, Zach Gallen was pitching very well. Merrill Kelly was pitching very well. That's what it took for the Cubs to finally lose a series for the first time in a month, is it took a situation where, you know, coin flips didn't go their way. And that isn't me being a homer or being an apologist for the Cubs. It's me recognizing that you could take this 3-4 series loss and use it as confirmation that the Cubs are a good team. Because I think if you're actually watching, it just was a reminder of that fact. Of course, it's also a reminder that baseball is going to get you sometimes, that even in a series where you can point to coin flips, they're not always going to fall in your favor, and you will lose games. You'll lose games that you feel like you should have won. You'll win games that you feel like you should have lost, and so on and so forth. But I felt maybe I would feel differently if the Cubs lost yesterday. Maybe I would have a harder time doing this tap dance if the Cubs had been swept. But as I watched that series play out, I just felt like it was further confirmation of what this Cubs team is, which is a pretty darn good, not elite team. And maybe even better than a Diamondbacks team that took three or four from them, but looks kind of similar to the Cubs in a lot of ways in terms of the overall talent level.
Yeah, I mean, Saturday's game kind of stood out to me as one of those. It's like you lost that game by like 5 feet combined with the Hap line drive that was snagged in the 10th, the Yan Gomes being thrown out at second in the 9th. I mean, that's like,
can I just mention on that one, by the way? Oh, that was, I'm watching that game with my kids. I'm on my computer and he hits that one and I'm like, yeah, as soon as he hit it, because it's that direction at Wrigley where it's like you don't really have to crush it for it to go out. Of course, misses the home run by a couple inches, and it came off the ivy so perfectly. People were screaming at Jan, like, you don't think you're a speed demon. Why are you trying to take second? Because it took the most implausible. When the ball hits the ivy at Wrigley, it does not come off perfectly like that. So you are just trained. You're taking two every time. I want you trying to take two every time. And it came off perfectly. And he still only got thrown out by like half of a hand.
So, yeah. And then that was another one where the wind kind of impacted it, right? Like I don't know how many home runs they lost this weekend. You can't really lament that specifically, but the fact that they're hitting the ball well. I think the biggest thing is where we're going on about 3 weeks now where the starting pitching is at like a under 2.5 ERA. Listen, I like Jordan Wicks and Javier Assad had an awful start on Thursday. Like he had no command of his pitches, and way too many pitches left over the heart of the plate. And, I think he was lucky to give up only three runs in what, like 5 2/3 or 6 innings, whatever.
Yes, for as much as I'm saying on Thursday that the Cubs hit the ball really hard and found gloves, that actually happened on the other side too.
Yep, absolutely. And Like, as great as Wix's start was, whatever day that was, Tuesday or Wednesday, like, there's, I want to see, like, a one more start from him where he misses some bats again and like, isn't relying solely on the defense. And you just want to see Assad bounce back. My gut is telling me that was just an off day after throwing a career high in pitches and then just, like, slightly off with command. And he's the type of guy that can't be slightly off with command. And he'll get right back at it. So those two things you obviously want to keep watching, but the reality is this starting pitching has been great lately, and that's, I think that's as big as anything that's happening right now, because this team is built on pitching and defense, and when they made their run, it was all on offense, right? It was the offense carrying, overcoming some rough pitching outings, and we haven't even touched on this, and maybe it'll happen when we get more information as the weeks progress, but, like, the mystery of Marcus Stroman continues. Suddenly, like, we were all convinced he's out for the year. Now we don't know when he's coming back, but it seems like he will at some point. Like, if he's throwing bullpens or live BPs already, he has a second one today, correct? We're recording on Monday. I don't know what the hell's going on there. I don't want to make any assumptions about what role he has and what impact he can have. But like I said, this team is built on pitching and defense. If any of those guys slip, it's a nice insurance policy to have Marcus Stroman there at the ready, if he is ready. I am not going to make any assumptions on that, because we did, what was that, 3 weeks ago now when we thought he was coming back? I have no idea what's going on there. For, like, honestly, every update, I'm just like, okay, when he makes the start, when you announce him as the starter and he's out there, that's when I'll buy it, when he throws that first pitch. But it's been such a weird saga that I don't want to assume anything. But it is interesting in the sense that this team kind of, I felt like their ceiling lowered when it seemed like he was done, right? So suddenly, if he can be back and be healthy and impact this team in a positive fashion, it kind of changes things a little bit, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah, listening to you guys, it just kind of underscores what a weird but good place the Cubs are in, when it's like, if the Cubs get their all-star pitcher back in, like, you know, two inning bursts, great. If not, whatever, that's a weird thing, like, yeah, I mean, PCA is one of the best prospects in the game, but he's just kind of this nice role player to have if and when you need him. And, yeah, they lost 3 or 4 to the Diamondbacks, but they looked pretty good overall, and you know, they didn't get, you know, blown out or anything like that. It's just and even the playoff race stuff, you know, you don't have 1908 hanging over it. You don't have this, like, end of an era, you know, the core's time is dwindling. Like, I don't know. I barely recognize this team right now. When you put all of that stuff together, we've all been watching it for years, but it's a really hard to, when you take all these things into account, I think it's kind of a new paradigm. And that's why we've tried to keep our kind of minds open and our eyes open here of, you know, kind of letting things play out. And to this point, the Cubs from top to bottom have largely been proven right.
That's in part, it's why it's so much easier to talk about these things after the fact than as they are happening, because you're right. It is probably hard for us to appreciate a paradigm shift fully while it is shifting. And you don't even want to assume that's what's happening. You know, you don't want to assume, like, okay, that sustained success thing that the Cubs talked about for so long that didn't happen. We can be honest about that now, and I think be assured that it did not happen. Maybe it's happening now. You know, maybe that's what it looks like now. Maybe that's what these conversations look like year after year after year. If the team can be competitive for years to come, maybe there's a PCA coming up each year, or there's a Jordan Wicks stepping up each year, or Javier Saad stepping up each year. It's just really hard to do that when you are in the middle of it, if you are. And I think probably my takeaway is to be reminded to enjoy the competitiveness of a season like this, because nothing is promised after this year. And for as much as I do think the future is bright and do think things like, you know, PCA coming up this year is just kind of a nice complimentary thing, you don't really know what next year is going to look like or the next 5 years. And so I think that that's almost my parting thought for this podcast, is that I still am just going to enjoy the shit out of him coming up now, and hoping that the Cubs can do well on this road trip and be open-minded about what it could become heading into the playoffs. And, you know, I think that's where I would leave it, is just to continue to enjoy. It almost circles back to where I opened the pod, that none of this was assured for the 2023 Cubs. Nothing was remotely expected, or, you know, let alone certain, to be here on, you know, mid-September talking about these topics. And so I try to catch myself to be reminded, this is pretty cool that we're getting to do this now, either professionally or just as fans. All right. You don't have to, if you don't have anything, we're good. So this is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. The Cubs will play at Coors Field and then Chase. Always a tough road trip going out west. Doesn't, especially Coors Field, doesn't matter how good or bad the Rockies are. That just always seems to be a tough trip for guys. So if you can take two of three there, you're pretty happy about that. And if PCA wants to join Javi and hit a game-winning home run in his debut, I wouldn't complain. That'd be cool. Those headlines would write themselves. So we'll talk to you later this week. Hope you have a good one, and take care, all. Sorry, Bears fans.